I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to continue our book club discussion of A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Today's sermon is called The American Dream. I'm joined in the studio by my good friend and fellow DJ, Bad DJ. Thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm honored, as usual, Dream Queen. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Yes. Thank you. You've brought a myriad of materials here, and I love it because we've got a lot of ground to cover.
We do.
Yeah. I really enjoy talking with people, not only about the sermons here and Dr. King's message, but about our relationship to religion and spirituality. And how we heal that.
That's well put, because to me, that's what happens. Dream Queen, just a little side note to you listeners, Dream Queen asked me to do this. I had some stuff to go through. I literally had to go through stuff to come on this show. And what that was the word reverend. I didn't realize that I had still stumbled over that from a childhood of being raised in the Southern Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I exited myself, and I was never asked to go back, just real briefly, 8 or 9 years old. And the preacher, they stand up front and they slap that Bible, and those old Bibles with the flimsy pages, they sound really good, loud, they scare the crap out of me. And I slid off the pew. Went outside knowing that my mama was going to whip my butt. This is a true story.
Yeah, continue.
And she didn't. She never said a word about it, and I never had to go back. Mm. Period.
Mm. Wow.
I mean, when people are up, when yelling, I mean, I know this now, but this is many years later. You don't yell at people. It's taken me a lifetime to figure that one out, because of the, childhood traumas that take a lifetime to get over. But anyway, I am honored to be here and read this. And here's what I want to focus on just here in this minute is from his speech and from the Declaration of Independence. This is the focus. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And I want to focus on those words, all men, because, see, my journey has taken me through, I don't know if I've ever shared this on air, maybe not, maybe I have. I was a lesbian separatist at one point. Mm. Yeah, I have come full circle, and that was in my early 20s. I hated men. I hated them. And so to understand Dr. King and what he says here about all men in the Declaration of Independence, I get it now. But I had to go through that, not around it. I had to absolutely hate men until within these past, I'd say, 5 years, I finally fell in love with men as I fell in love with women. And now I understand something different about all of this. I understand that at the time, Dr. King had to say it that way. That was the only way he could have said it. And by saying all men, I get it now. I have no issues with it. And I used to have tons of issues with things like that. So I've come a long way. And yes, religion has harmed me. But before I get into that, let me get back to his book, page 86, third paragraph down, quote, "The first saying we notice in this dream is an amazing universalism. It doesn't say some men. It says all men. It doesn't say all white men. It says all men, which includes black men. It does not say all Gentiles. It says all men, which includes Jews. It doesn't say all Protestants. It says all men, which includes Catholics. It doesn't even say all theists and believers. It says, quote unquote, all men, which includes humanists and agnostics." End.
So, why are we talking as women?
Because we're part of it. That's why.
But it just says all men.
That is exactly true.
I need to go back home and get in the kitchen. Break it down for me, Professor.
Well, at the time, remind me, the 60s, late 50s,
this one
early
was
60s.
Written in 1965.
Okay.
And delivered
right.
in 1965.
Right. So you have to go back to that time when he wrote this. And because one of the things I understand now that I never understood then, and I don't agree with it, okay? I don't agree with it, but I understand it. That was the only way that the true liberation could happen was talking about men, because our culture is so
patriarchal.
Yes, thank you for spitting that word. But at the time, he had to say men, because at the time, I mean, the 60s and the whole feminist thing hadn't even happened. And even that, you know, did that liberate us? But that's beside the point. But yes, I get that at the time.
No, I get
he
it.
Had to say men. And I understand the whys of it, too. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. But that's irrelevant.
Yeah. There's some interesting side notes about King and Bayard Rustin, who's gay, but was a very prominent activist with the Southern Leadership Council and the Council of Churches and everything.
Uh-huh.
And very much out front, but not out front. Because people were afraid of what that would do to the movement at the time.
Right.
To acknowledge
right.
that. And even though they worked very closely and did a lot of good work together, it wasn't on the list of things to talk about. However, all of the civil rights were for all people. And he, you know, Dr. King in his work was very clear about that. All people. Jesus
right.
loves everybody. God created everyone.
Right.
And it's always no exceptions.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about Dr. King. And I appreciate, you know, coming here just to get over the word reverend. And I didn't realize I still had some of that.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Good. I get to do my work. I get mm-hmm. to go deeper. I get to let that word not be a trigger anymore. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Amen.
Yeah.
And one more testimony. I mean, we were out here just opening up the book with Icky Mac, and we talked about the J word, and we opened the whole series trying to acknowledge Jesus as a trigger word for some people.
Uh-huh. And it is.
It is.
You're looking at someone who that is true.
Yes.
It's not just the word reverend. I had to, but the thing is, I've been down the rabbit hole long enough with Yeshua ben Joseph that I know something different now. So I come from a whole different place of a whole lot more education, mm-hmm. and that makes a difference. Plus, if I may, I want to divert just real quickly,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll come back, because I feel like the diversion is important to understand, and I understand people's hesitancy towards the word Jesus, the word Bible, the word reverend, all of it, because
mm-hmm.
you're looking at the person who, I have been so harmed by religion in my life, and the so-called religious people around me. That thought they were good and doing Christ's work when they weren't. They were just being rude to a child.
Yeah.
Seriously. So real quickly, because there are a lot of rabbit holes, but I want to focus on Dr. King today. And there's this little side note. There's a book called The Harm Done by Religion, The Free Inquiry. It's edited by Ronald Lindsay, Andreas Zelensky, Nicole Scott, and Tom Flynn. And Tom Flynn does the introduction. And I want to read just a quick thing from that introduction, because when we go down religious rabbit holes in this culture, I feel like we have to understand a whole lot. And here's what we have to understand. Why not adopt a more live and let live approach? After all, once you balance its positive against its negatives, what harm has religion done? It's a fair question. Many answers are possible. Some are collected in this anthology. Gregory Paul, an independent scholar who penned one of the lengthiest and most x-rating and historical essays that Free Inquiry has published, might reply by pointing out Adolf Hitler, building on a model developed by Benito Mussolini just a few years earlier, channeled massive state funding to Germany's Lutheran and Catholic churches. By doing so, Hitler ensured that those powerful institutions would remain largely silent as Hitler's Nazi party took power, tumbling Germany into genocidal madness and making a charnel house of Europe and much of the rest of the world. When the smoke cleared, the churches, the Vatican especially, continued to profit by Hitler's funding scheme, the only significant Nazi initiative that post-war Germany never rescinded, hugely enhancing the Catholic Church strength and assuring its capacity to resist progressive reforms across the world right up to the present day. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I'm very aware of the harm that religion has done. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the only thing that can make this conversation okay for me, is because I do know that. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to talk about the beauty and the wonderful things that Dr. King has done. And I do appreciate deeply, deeply, that Dr. King is calling Christians out on their non-Christian behavior. And he's been doing that the whole time, not just with that one and focusing on the Declaration of Independence or even the Constitution and what it says, but that he has continually, through reading his speeches in this book, called for humaneness. It goes beyond religion to me. It's just basic human decency and kindness. And yes, for him, religion is a big part of that.
Thank you for all of that information. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of The Harm Done by Religion. I think it's very important to have this conversation. I've been thinking about how Christians talk to counterculture people like ourselves, mm-hmm. and how much I appreciate the Christians, the real Christians in my real life that mm-hmm. have reached past fundamentalist belief structures to be human and compassionate and follow the teachings of actual Christ, which is what makes you a Christian,
right?
Not slapping around people with the Old Testament and the Book of Revelation, but the whole thing. I know a lot of people are moving away from religion in America uh-huh. and spirituality, but the government is leaning into fundamentalism and the Supreme Court is leaning into fundamentalism.
Yeah, to use it.
Yes. And
yeah,
so
abusively.
My point of the conversation is how to live with each other as fundamentalists and counterculture activists. Like, how do we share this space yeah. of America? Because I can't expect to change everyone's mind, especially not in a generation. Dr. King was assassinated and martyred. Many people were yeah. martyred for trying to bring unity yeah. to the world.
Yeah.
And it's not a cool slant to take, because there are militants who support me and me living. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I will kill for you. Do I want that? Yeah. I'm not saying that. Like, what I mean is there are activists who believe in arming themselves.
Yeah. No,
I'm not saying government, anybody listening, I'm not saying my homies are in these streets trying to kill for me. I am not a cult leader. But I'm just being clear that they're, like Dr. King says in last week's sermon, the letter to President Eisenhower that I read, and it's like, we can't hold mm-hmm. these people back for much longer. Like, there are people out here who are going on my word to do nonviolence. Mm-hmm. But if they keep being faced with violence and no changes are made, we can't hold them back anymore. The streets are, and we saw when King was assassinated, the streets were red with fire and blood.
Absolutely.
The riots.
Yeah.
You know,
you can ask nicely for so long.
Yeah.
And nice doesn't always get it. There just comes a point where you ask nice in this culture, and you can ask till you're blue in the face. It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
And so I can't say I agree with violence, but I certainly understand it. I understand resorting to it. I mean, when you've been stepped on and under someone's boot your whole life, yeah, I get it.
They were literally in the streets being bitten by
yes.
dogs.
Yes,
and it's
absolutely.
Like, people don't and really understand. Yeah. And Matt broke that, or Icky Mac broke that down as being a water operator, what it feels like to be hit with that type of water pressure and how we become desensitized. And I'm not talking directly to you like you don't understand.
No,
I'm
no,
talking to the audience, and I'm talking to young people
yeah.
who who've not been in the streets. One of the things that actually took me off the streets of protesting was seeing people come back from the 2004 protests against the stealing of the 2004 elections,
yeah.
where George W. Bush was awarded a second term. And there were a lot of protests and people were being shot by beanbags and all of these rubber bullets and things. And I saw people with canes, and we know Joe Lewis.
Yeah.
I mean, John Lewis suffered a long-term brain effects due to being billy clubbed by police.
Yes.
On the Pettus Bridge. And so, you know, it's like, what, this does not come lightly, folks.
Yeah.
And there are people out there who are trying to kill us. Literally,
yes,
who
absolutely.
Are killing, literally. There was other well, young people died this week at the hands of police.
Yeah.
So I wanted to read really quickly from the introduction. We are looking at A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And right on page 79, Bishop T.D. Jakes Sr., who wrote this introduction, says, "In this generation, we question how men can sleep while people die, children starve, and communities collapse. Perhaps it has been good for men to sleep. Perhaps sleep is the only time that prejudice and injustice, indifference, and apathy finally recede far enough for conscience to speak and the voice of God to be heard. The American dream is far more than a sermon. It is a message. No, it is an alarm. It is meant to disturb the indifferent and ignite the docile, dormant minds of people who choose to look the other way while others die. This work is important, and I'm talking to some of the people out here who are discouraged, who are my friends and fellow activists, who find themselves questioning their mental health and their capacity to function.
And that's, yeah.
How do we stay silent? How do you not take every second that you have on the radio, every second that you have talking to another human being, and not be screaming in their face about ending oppression and imperialism and abuse?"
Yeah. Well, I've made it to 70. And
you've got quite the reputation for going around and telling people
well,
how to grow.
But, well, and maybe that's a mistake. Maybe it's not.
No, it's your purpose. It's a work.
But I also know that one of the things that I see for me personally as I get older is I'm done fighting. Mm-hmm. I am done fighting. I'm not going to fight anymore in the way I used to. That these last few years have really showed me that. I'll do something different in a different way, mm-hmm. But still stay on this, which brings me back to, I want to get back to Christ, if I may. And if that word makes you uncomfortable, good. Find the uncomfortable in it. Because what I know for sure is Christ is a consciousness, okay? Yeshua ben Joseph was a human being that had Christ consciousness, okay? He was also a demigod. A lot of people don't want to know that. They don't want to think about that. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole for the research. But, oh, I'm sorry, the research is there. The mm-hmm. archaeology is there. It's just, I just want people to understand that Christ is a consciousness, people. Yes, that human being held it. And my question to you is, humans, can you also hold it? Okay, those of us that have had a boot on ourselves for a little too long, whether we're queer, whether we're of color, whether we're whatever it is that mainstream doesn't like about you, basically, you know, and that Christ is a consciousness. It's a consciousness that you can walk into, that you can hold, that you can put on, that you can be. And yet we come to this, well, who do you think you are, God? Well, hey, guess what? A lot of people say, well, God said. Well, Jesus said. Well, I picked up a Bible literally the other day, and in one of those beautiful ones where all of Jesus' words were in red, well, thumb through the Bible and find out how much red there is. Not a whole lot of red, is there? It's a lot of interpretation. And years after his death. And even during.
Well, a lot of our Bible is the Old Testament.
Yeah.
If you look at the quantity of it, a lot of it is, and you were talking earlier about new books being discovered that would be considered scriptures.
The book of Isaiah, if right. I may, which was discovered in a vase that's at least 10,000 years old. And we're having to take that information and rearrange the book of Isaiah. But that's all part of it, is that we don't want to find the archaeology and move our stories around to go with the archaeology. We want to hold a story and make everything fit into that story, and that's not it. The story is a lie. Anyway, getting back, let me go back to Dr. King, though, because I do appreciate him in every way, shape, and form for what he has done with Christ consciousness himself. I would consider Dr. King a true Christian.
So what do you consider Christ consciousness?
I consider it someone who can actually live those ideas of Yeshua ben Joseph, which were kindness, which were like, for example, this story always, I heard this as a kid and I'll never forget it. It's the story of the lady who came and gave that little thin piece of money, like maybe a dime, right? So she gives a dime and she was ridiculed when that is all she had to give. And Yeshua ben Joseph came and you know, that's the part of the kicking over the tables and, you know, being violent. He was violent. He came in and kicked those bankers' tables over and basically said, who are you? This is still money. Look at who she is and what she went through and all the poverty that she is in to give to you. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, the real stuff of being kind and not just giving lip service, but actually acting this stuff out in your life, you know? What do? Do you slander queers? Do you slander black people? What do? You know? That you don't do that when you're a true Christian, that you understand that you have to work through your issues with other people. And I think that's where I've actually garnered something from Christ consciousness, which is understanding that even people that, it doesn't matter whether I don't like them. There's a lot of people we're all going to not like, but I damn well better love them. And I do. And that's taken me a lifetime, that love of humanity. And I love humanity deeply. Mm-hmm. It's the only reason I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Read the passage that inspires you right now.
Well, okay. I want to, let's see where we got. And again, this is starting at the bottom of page 92. He's got the quote. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, end quote. And when we live it out, we know, as I say so often, that the no D is as significant as the PhD. And the man who has been to no house is as significant as the man who's been to Morehouse. We build our little class systems, and you know you got a lot of Negroes with classism in their veins. You know that they don't want to be bothered with certain other Negroes, and they try to separate themselves from them. It's an inclusiveness. And here's another way that he says that inclusiveness. I'm going to start at the bottom, page 94. The woman or man who goes in there to sweep the floor is just as significant as the doctor. Because if he doesn't get the dust off that floor, germs will begin to circulate. And those same germs can do injury and harm to the human being. I submit to you this morning that there is dignity in all work. When we learn to pay people decent wages, whoever cooks in your house, whoever sweeps the floor in your house, is just as significant as anybody who lives in that house. And everybody that we call a maid is serving God in a significant way. And I love the maids. I love the people who have been ignored. And I want to see them get the kind of wages that they need. And their job is no longer a menial job for you to come and see its worth and dignity. And to me, that's what Dr. King is a lot about, mm-hmm. The dignity and the worth as a human being, that he keeps calling that out to people. And I agree with it because it's taken, like I said, it's taken me a lifetime to get here and to understand these things. These things didn't come easy when I was a kid. I mean, criminy, I was raised Southern Baptist. I am a Southerner.
Mm-hmm. Tell the people where you're from.
I'm from Virginia. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, folks.
Yeah.
In the heart of it.
That's right. And I was just watching a segment last night on YouTube about the erasure of the attempted erasure of Native Americans in Virginia. And it was a conversation on race and census and, you know, Virginia as the first colony a lot of the work that was done for the evil of segregation and white supremacy, a lot of these laws were started in Virginia and disseminated not only across America, but across the world. And it's very, very interesting material. So it's no joke to be from Virginia. I'm from D.C. and we talked about it. We might be related.
we could very well be.
I got family from that area for sure. And a lot of them are white family, you know. And we're all, and that's part of the whole conversation about race is it's all a lie. It's made up. And this, the segment that I watched was about how they made a lot of Native Americans register as black because they felt like the Native American bloodline was so tainted since 1600 that they were, that the people in that area, and it was all part of wanting to preserve the purity of their whiteness. So you couldn't marry outside your race. Right. All that was illegal. We get to Loving in the 50s and, you know, around the civil rights movement, everything. It was, it's
and a lot of
illegal.
That is about bloodline, and something has helped me. How do I even say this? It's about chasing the bloodline, and they're still trying to keep that bloodline. And the interesting thing about that is the bloodline of Christ has been followed.
Well, we were I wanted to follow up on the demigod status that you had touched on. So why don't you tell people a little bit more about what you mean? Just a little.
Okay.
You know, tell us a little bit more about what you mean.
Well, you have to really start understanding your archaeology and go way, way back with this. We talk about God, a lot. People do. Well, if they knew who God really was, I think people might freak out. And like I said, I just have done too much research and too much looking in terms of that. You know, we have to use the word Anunnaki in here. And we have to bring in things, terms like ancient aliens, and that tends to freak people out. But oh well, go down the rabbit hole. Again, I'm one that when the evidence shows me something that I don't want to believe, I'm going to have to believe it because the evidence is showing me that. Or I can say, oh, that's not real evidence because I'm just trying to fit it into my stupid story. And that's a lot of what archaeology is to this day. And it's why I did pick up the book about Isaiah by Greg Braden, because he does understand that the narrative even today is trying to be pushed into a story as opposed to letting the evidence show us where the story goes. Mm-hmm. All right. So demigod, half God, half human. That's what demigod means. So Yeshua ben Joseph was a demigod. Yes.
So Yeshua ben Joseph, as the Anunnaki theory, we touched on a little bit, the Zechariah Sitchin interpretation of the Sumerian texts, the tablets that were found in the ancient.
Well, there's
the
oldest. But there's just a continuum of archaeology and so many other books, not just Sitchin these days.
Can you give us one or two?
Chariots of the Gods. Okay,
right.
I can't think of any other offhand.
Von Däniken wrote that.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's just so much information. And yes, some of these guys, like I heard one of my friends said to me, well, I don't want to watch that because that's like the guy with the funny...
The hair. The guy with the hair.
And the thing is, what I have learned to do is to listen to these men and understand... and women, too. They're finally pulling the women into all this, which I really like, to understand what's just their own opinion. Because you need to be able to listen to anyone and understand what's their personal opinion and what's true. And that's hard to do. I mean, that's like saying, well, God told me this morning. Mm-hmm. Excuse me? Really? I mean, when I hear anybody says God said or Jesus said, I immediately kind of, mm-hmm. Like we can't go there because none of us are talking directly to these people. And if you are, I don't know how I would believe that, how I could know that for sure.
Well, I would contend that we all have our relationship to spirit. Now, whatever that is, and I think I also hold to universal truths that are communicated to humanity as a whole through our intuition or our heart. You know, we know what's true and what's real. And I think that we all have a relationship with God, whatever you want to call that. We try to define that before.
We definitely
do. And it's elusive to know what's between your high, what's your higher consciousness, mm-hmm. what's your awake, regular consciousness, what is your spirit guides, what is what some people call the angels, a network of spirit guardians. Right. I mean, what is God to you? That's a question I have.
To me personally?
Yes.
It's personally. Everything. Mm-hmm. So, and it includes me.
Do you ever hear the voice you. Of God in yourself?
No,
in a way?
No, mm-hmm. no. This lifetime has been dark for me. That's mm-hmm. been one of my issues is it took DMT to actually know that they were there for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. There's a reason I'm going dark in this lifetime. It's taken me a lifetime to figure out why, because I needed to come to a lot of this stuff on my own without it being told to me as true. I had to find out what was true for me. And what is God? Everything is God. You're God. I'm God. Everything is God. Nothing isn't God here. Nothing. The devil is a fallen angel. Hello, people. Wake up. And if I may, before I stop, I am going to say on that one that if you say it's in God's hands and you throw away your responsibility, I call poo-poo on that. Do not throw away your responsibility. Take your responsibility because it is in your hands. And it's not, oh, it's in God's hands. I just think that is, I've heard that way too many times.
All right. So let's bring it back to the text. And okay. But I'm going to, this is a good segue to talk about God-given gifts as written in the Declaration of Independence. And that is the whole part, is that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator certain inalienable rights. And I'm going to read from page 86. And King says, quote, and again, audience, we are reading from A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Dream Queen. Bad DJ has joined me in the KMRD studio. Thank you for joining. So it says here, as in the words of Dr. King, it says that each of us has certain basic rights that are neither derived from or conferred by the state. In order to discover where they came from, it is necessary to move back behind the dim mist of eternity. They are God-given, gifts from His hands. Never before in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, and unequivocal language the dignity and the worth of human personality. The American dream reminds us, and we should think about it anew on this Independence Day, that every man is an heir of the legacy of dignity and worth. So we have to hold a lot of things if we're going to really talk about it. And King says that how important God was to the founding fathers of this country, their God in mm-hmm. their way, their oppressive white man God was mm-hmm. the idea on which they built this country. And I'm merging what you're saying and what King is saying, that God can give us certain things, but it is our responsibility as humans to interpret these gifts and how we present them to the world. So they can be presented to be self-serving. And then there is the Christ consciousness, which is do what thou wilt to serve and harm none. Okay, this is how we enact our God on earth, is to support and uplift and provide for each other as fellow humans. And so King lines out some challenges that we face as a nation to enact the American dream on page mm-hmm. 87. He says that he wants to first reiterate the fact that we are challenged more than ever before to respect the dignity and the worth of all human personality. Mm-hmm. That is a big challenge that we face in America.
That's the bottom line in my book.
So we're able to murder and explode and beat and imprison and chastise and cuss out and wave a gun at any other human being on this planet because we don't respect their dignity in front of our own ego and desire. It doesn't have to be God that makes you care about other people. But if you're going around running for office on an evangelical platform, then I need you to be honest with your constituency, with what you are worshiping. If it's greed and power and bloodlust, then don't call yourself a Christian. Do us all a favor and just call yourself a capitalist and run America on a capitalist ticket. And then we just decide where we want to go from here. Just be, call a thing what it is.
Yeah. That's a hard one. We're so far down this rabbit hole in indoctrination of people in this country that basic dignity. I mean, I agree with you 100%. That's something that I have seen from, I don't know, I think 8 years old was my first rough experience where that was in my face. Yeah. And when are we going to do that? That's a great question. Anybody that calls themselves a Christian that isn't doing that isn't a Christian, like you just said. And that is the challenge because it goes, I think a lot of this goes past God, whatever. And when I say that, let's just throw all that out the window. Like, how do we treat each other? No matter what you think, no matter what you believe. And it comes down to me, down to that still.
Right. And that's where I'm circling all the way back to my purpose in like picking this book, because Dr. King has obviously a really specific platform, and that's justice and equity for all people through nonviolent resistance. In America, that's very hard. And he was martyred because he called out all of the institutions right to their face. He called out capitalism. He called out war. He called out segregation and racism. He called out churches, white and black churches. He called out to the individual to be more and do more. And people don't like being called out. So from page 92, Dr. King says, "I tell you this morning, my friends, the reason we got to solve this problem here in America, because God somehow called America to do a special job for mankind and the world." A little further down, "Somehow, if we can't solve the problem in America, the world can't solve the problem, because America is the world in miniature, and the world is America writ large." And he means that there's no other place in the world where more of a diversity of human beings have collected than in America. And I want to touch very quickly on what's going on with the census right now. I just read an article from the AP Wire yesterday that the census is changing for the first time in 27 years how they classify race. And I don't have the documents in front of me. Again, big thanks to Little Queen Trashmouth for bringing this back outside to her audience, but the 1619 Project, episode 2 on race, people need to watch it. It ties directly back to, it says this whole part about Virginia and the Bureau of Statistics and how we are the only country in the world, or started it, to have race be a checkbox on forms when you're filling out things for the government, okay? That started here to preserve white blood and white supremacy. So now, this year, right now, you can Google changing, census changing race, that people who were of Middle Eastern and North African descent were considered and encouraged to check the box white. And now they are, there is a new box now there for them to be considered North African and Middle Eastern. And these countries include Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt, or something like that. So it's just really funny because we're at war with your, we're bombing you now, and your white card just got revoked. And these are funny things that people need to recognize, because you will say, oh, you know, me and Little Queen Trash Mouth can sit at the counter at the mineshaft together and have chicken fingers and whatever. Uh-huh. That wasn't possible 60 years ago or 70 years ago. Look how far we've come. And I'm like, and then we can look ahead and say, hey, if we don't hurry up and vote blue no matter who, then we're going to have a fascist regime. And I'm telling you right now that the boxes that you check on your government forms, number one, you don't have to fill it out. The other thing that that they had a representative quoted in the article from the census that was saying, oh, people want this because they want to be represented. They, you know, we want to show how much diversity America has. And I'm telling you that it's a trap. You're going on a roll. Yeah. And now they know that you're Muslim or that your brother and you know, there are enemies now. And be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
And so America, we wear our diversity as a badge of honor. And at the same time, you will use it to kick people out, to put people in jail, to murder them on the street. It is a very, very slippery slope.
Yeah. I think it's only gotten slippery since King's time. I think that the opportunities we had when he was alive are gone now. Yep. I really do. I don't think that he saw something. Yeah, he saw something. And just my age and having experienced that time. Those opportunities aren't here now to take that step as a country, as a whole country.
Yeah.
And that door, as far as I can see, has closed. Doesn't mean I'm not gonna, you know, doesn't mean I'm gonna give up. Hell no.
No, we can't give up, but we do have to give the mic over to DJ Barnacle. Do you have one more quick? Yeah, no. Do you have a goodbye you want to say to the people?
I just want to say thank you, Dream Queen, very much for having me on here. Thank you for choosing the books that you choose in your book club. They're deep and it's completely worth the conversation. I'm very grateful to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for being here. You know, God told me to pick this. Look, yeah, I'm going to mess with you. So I can't let people come in and not get messed with. God told me, you know, I've been dabbling and a friend picked Bell Hooks. And I think I told you this. I opened and pulled back the veil. I lit a candle and I pulled out a piece of tourmalated quartz on a chain. And I had three books out, and it was Don Miguel Ruiz with Mastery of Love. It was this one. And it was Sensitive is the New Strong. Huh. And I asked Divinity, what should be next. And I got a soft yes from Miguel Ruiz and a very hard no for Sensitive is the New Strong and a very hard yes.
Excellent.
For Dr. King. And I think it's just melded in perfectly. This is just me playing around about seeing like all these different ways of divination and connecting with spirit. Right. And I'm like, I don't know what to do next. And I could have stopped the book club. I could ask everybody's opinion, which is really not in my nature as a Taurus. Yeah.
But something you said is so important there is that, and it goes right back to what I firmly believe, spirituality is personal.
Yes.
It is personal.
Till I'm out here thrusting it on you, giving you a book. Read this. God told me you need to read this.
And it did, because it got me past the word reverend and me past all that. So I am continually willing to grow and change, and I will still grow and change. I will never stop growing and changing.
I just want to say real quick, in the words of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., a knock at midnight, I'm going to leave with this quote. And it is talking about the importance of nonviolence and the importance of being dedicated to the movement of liberation for all people. We will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We won't give up. Okay? We will meet your physical force with soul force. We cannot in all good conscience obey your unjust laws, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as cooperation with good. And so throw us in jail. We will go in those jails and transform them from dungeons of shame to havens of freedom and human dignity. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities after midnight hours and drag us out in some wayside road and beat us and leave us half dead. And as difficult as it is, we will still love you. And further down it says, one day we will win our freedom. but we will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will so appeal to your heart and your conscience that we will win you in the process. And our victory will be a double victory. All right, y'all. I love you. I'll catch you next week. God willing, and the creek don't rise no higher. Look out for your fellow human and yourself. This has been In the Cab with Dream Queen on KMRD LP, Madrid, New Mexico.